States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everybody, for being here. Attendance.
You're welcome.
Bagnata.
Here.
Stroyan.
Di Lorenzo.
Willis.
Donna Teagan.
Review the previous minutes, the minutes from the
workshop.
The minutes from the last meeting needed to be reviewed, and because of issues with the secretary, they're not. So we'll table those, but we can approve the minutes from the workshop.
I didn't have an issue with it, so I make a motion we approve the minutes from the 13th, was it?
Yep, February 13th workshop. The second.
I was not present.
Yes, I'm saying.
All second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? One abstention. So we have a quorum, but we have an abstention. As long as we have two votes, we're good, right?
You're good.
Okay. Melbourne Township Comprehensive Plan.
I have no update. Do we have anything from Jason?
We didn't get anything from Jason yet.
No.
Okay. Amendment to Section 407 of the zoning ordinance.
I think we're waiting to schedule a meeting with...
We haven't gotten any correspondence from the Water Authority, and we're waiting to schedule the meeting.
Yep.
And is that something that you were going to talk to John about, or...
Yes.
Okay. So, zoning warehouse standards...
I have John's letter from last Friday, but I haven't had an opportunity to look at it.
There was a letter in reference. Oh, is that last?
February 13th?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Thursday, I guess, but I didn't get it until Friday, so.
Mm-hmm. All right, did everybody have a chance to go through that ordinance that I brought in?
I did look at your ordinance, yes.
Yes.
Okay, so there's certain things we're going to want to take out of here. And here, John Fuller sent us... Everybody's got a copy of it. Mm-hmm. Definitions. And this is actually a really good document that I was talking to Tony about how to incorporate, because it's 11 pages long. But it covers everything from the ITE. Gives you the different warehouses.
So,
you're probably better off explaining it to me, Tony.
Well, there's different classifications of warehouse, obviously, and they go by, believe it or not, of all things, they go by square footage and height of the building. And so they call one a high cube warehouse. That's on page
three.
Okay.
Yeah, he breaks down the warehouse definitions in the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, page three has the definition of high cube. Basically, it has to be at least 200,000 gross square feet of floor area with a ceiling height of 24 feet or more. Used primarily for storage and manufactured goods. There are others... definitions that are in, they're marked on this table, but if you go through the table, it's easier to look at the table. There's a standard warehouse for storage, and that's on page four. The standard warehouse for storage is basically for bulk storage or assembly activities. There's what they call a transload facility, which focuses on distributions of pallet loads or larger manufacturers. The duration of storage is very little, and usually it's for final distribution to a retail store. That can also be for a manufacturer to wholesale distribute. Short-term storage, best example of short-term storage would be what you often look at as maybe a truck terminal, where trucks pull in, stuff is either loaded or left on the load, and then it pulls out. Cold storage is exactly that. It's for distribution to retail centers. Fulfillment center, which is basically what we think of when we think of the Amazon and Chewy places and things like that. And then there's the parcel hub, which is typically something for UPS, USPS, things of that nature. But if you look at the definitions, parcel hub.
Back to three?
Yeah, back to page three. Transload is usually pallet loads or larger with little or no storage duration. Then there's a short-term storage, products that are held on site for a short time. Cold storage, which is permanent, at least part of the building, for later distribution. Fulfillment centers, which are what we commonly think of as Adidas and all the ones that are out there next to UPS up there in Pittston. There's a
direct Amazon distribution. And,
right, yeah. So it's all direct distribution, but those are the types. One of the things that is curious is that if you go further down to page six, fulfillment centers are usually at least 40 feet high, or up to a maximum of 40 feet, whereas your parcel hubs are typically half that size, and your standard warehouse is usually lower than that, and so is your short-term and your cold storage. Because cold storage is much higher because of the refrigeration products that have to be up high. So, you know, the average fulfillment center is going to be at least, it's going to have at least a 24-foot
inside ceiling
and a 40-foot outside base.
Yeah, and that's what was proposed with the last one.
Yeah.
24-foot inside. Because mm-hmm. that's exactly how much room they need for each skid.
Right. This time. They need to do 3 8-footers, and they need to get the machines in there.
Yep.
So this is the ITE's definition of warehousing. I'm not exactly sure how we incorporate that into our zoning ordinance. John had in his letter suggested that the township adopt the definitions used by the Institute of Transportation Engineers due to their established standards in dealing with warehousing. There's a lot of ordinances out there. We have another one, this Truck Terminal Distribution Center, which is the York County Planning Commission ordinance, and that's there's some very good outlines in there, but I would think that if you really wanted to hold someone to industry standards, our engineers basically say this is the industry standard.
Right. That's why I wanted him to write that up.
Well,
now
this is all a definition and lays out the trip. The, mm-hmm. the ordinance from York County gets more specific about the details around the building and what's going to happen there, though.
Yep. Yeah, this is definitely...
And I'm not saying replace that with this.
No, I think you need to...
We need to go through and incorporate right. the York County plan right. Ordinance in there.
And add this as definition.
And add this along with it.
Mm-hmm. As definition.
As definition.
And you know, it's interesting because John also mentioned in there that the ITE really doesn't deal with anything under 200,000 square feet. So it's really up kind of to the township as to what happens under 200,000 square feet. Now, if you looked at this York County ordinance, they had a definition of warehouse, which was very interesting. They called it a warehouse slash logistics center. And that's on page one of the definitions. And they said that it could be a building or group of buildings primarily used for long-term indoor storage, transfer, and distribution of products. And then they classified them as small warehouse logistics center, anything that does not exceed 25,000 square feet of gross floor area per lot, and then large warehouse logistics center as a warehouse logistics center that is excess of 25,000 square feet of gross floor area. So my thought, rightfully or right or wrong on this, is since the ITE doesn't deal basically with anything under 200,000 square feet, why don't we
make it 25 to 200?
Make it 25 to 200.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I thought we would do with this, and then that would take over.
Yeah. Keep the small warehouse at 25 to 200, and just keep the same standards, because a lot of these standards. I do have one question, because on the noise, their noise levels are at 60, not exceeding 60 dBs.
That's just that's incredibly low.
Yeah. And then they contradicted.
I read that.
They contradicted and say the community noise equivalent level at the boundary of any developed property not containing a sensitive receptor shall not exceed 70. Okay. And then sound is produced for a cumulative period of 1 minute in any hour may exceed the standards by up to 10 dBAs. So does that mean 80?
That means 80.
Or does that mean 70?
I think they had a typo in there, didn't realize it.
Okay.
Yeah, but 80 decibels is a lawnmower.
Yeah.
Not even.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
60 decibels is what we're doing right now.
60 decibels is normal conversation.
Yeah. I think when we did the tower ordinance, if I remember correctly, I think they set all the noise levels for the tower, including the generator and everything, at 64.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just wanted to point out the things that didn't make a lot of sense to me. Okay. That was one of them, because it kind of contradicts itself.
This is why I wanted everybody to read it, and then we take it one page at a time. If there's any questions on the page, we'll go over it. And whatever, I have one floating around here somewhere with my comments on it.
Well, and then buffer yards, okay?
Typical lawnmower is 85 to 90 decibels.
85 to 90? That's a lawnmower, all right.
That's what I just Googled.
But I think that's louder than a tractor trailer, a lawnmower. It's only a little.
Oh, I don't know.
Not than a Jake break.
Yeah.
No.
I've heard some loud ones.
At 1,200 RPMs, which is parking lot RPMs, they're loud. Clutch fan kicks in.
Yep.
I'm just thinking of the motor running.
No. You got to start out.
You can't have a conversation in my shop next to one when it's running.
No.
Not on high idle.
Nope.
They make all kinds of noise. The reefer units themselves are louder than a lawnmower.
Well, that's like what I'm saying.
If they're doing refrigerated project.
When they're saying 80 decibels, they're talking about at the adjoining property line.
Yeah, at the adjoining property line, but...
Which is just saying you need a buffer.
Right, but if you look at the buffer yard on page five, and this is why I want, thinking in terms of this. Okay, where the combined footprint of the principal structures is less than 100,000 square feet, then it's a 100-foot buffer along the entire length of any street frontage, and 500 feet from an existing property line or a school, daycare center, hospital, place of worship, park, or public open space.
I say change it around.
Okay.
100 feet around all the other properties and 500 feet from the road. Road, you got road noise.
And we do have that thing in our, we have that thing in our ordinance about parking in front. So
right.
That's kind of screws them up a lot. But no, I agree. 100 feet from the road seems like a real short.
Well, this is something that I wanted to discuss later on, but this is probably as good a time as any. The parking seems to be a big issue about whether it's in the front or the rear. I think we should keep it the way we want it, the preferred parking in the rear. But if they got to park in the front, they should have a total buffer zone between the parking and the road. Yeah, when I go down to Lakewood, New Jersey, Brick Township, these stores are all set back. All you see is the sign and driveway. You don't see the buildings. You got to drive down that driveway to get in the back and see what's it, you know, go to where you're going. But you don't see it from the road.
No.
And it's rather nice, I thought. So even
similar to the Home Depot in Westfall.
Yeah, similar to Home Depot in Westfall.
Mm-hmm. Where you have a sign and then you go up a couple hundred yards and you're at the store.
Because so many of them want the parking in the front. Well, if you want to put parking in the front, you got to put a buffer in.
Yeah. I think 150-foot buffer or 100-foot buffer is probably not enough. For a warehouse.
Yeah. But there's also, I think they also have in here the amounts of property you need for the type of warehouse. Mm-hmm. And that's where we really got to look at it. Because if we're going to go with a 500-foot buffer, then we got to make sure that the property we're calling for is big enough to accommodate a big warehouse.
If you go through it, it's gonna have, if it's over 250,000 square feet, it says a minimum 300, this is page 6. A minimum number 3A, a minimum 300-foot buffer shall be provided along the entire length of any street frontage of any property upon which the facility is located and along any property line which abuts or is within 500 feet of an existing residential property line or zone, school, daycare center, hospital, place of worship, designated park, or public open space. And a 50-foot buffer shall be provided along all other property lines. So basically, it doesn't make any sense to me because you have a 500-foot buffer in the front and 50-foot on the side.
Yeah, that don't make sense.
How does that make sense?
I have to have that at my house.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I said, you know, I think this is good, but we should really read through it. And I don't want to read through the whole thing.
No, I'm not going through the whole thing today, but let's get a time together where we can actually spend time on it, page by page. Mm-hmm.
I think it's up to the full the board to reach the full body of the commissioners to reach a consensus on it, you know. If it's a small warehouse, we don't need 500 feet, but should we have 150 or 200 in the front and then 100 on the sides and a couple hundred in the back or if it's near a roadway or something? You know, and the same thing is true if it's a big warehouse. How much in the front, how much on the sides, how much in the back?
Well, typically with the properties we have, especially up on 6, you're going to have developments in the back. So the back buffer has to be larger than the side buffers. Because the side you're going to commercial, unless it's residential.
Well, there's another factor too. I mean, look at the property that they were proposing to do the warehouse on. It butts up to 84. you know, do you want to have, do you want to have a warehouse butting up against the highway?
Oh, they're always going to try and get the highway.
That's where it should be.
That's where it should be.
Yeah, 50 feet in the rear, that's what I'm saying. You know, it might make sense in some areas to have a
50-foot setback. No, we just have to change it to, like, if there's a residential development behind it, you get a bigger buffer zone. Same with on the side. If we're going to go with, let's say, 100 feet on the side for a buffer zone on a smaller warehouse, mm-hmm. well, if the next property next to it's residential, then it's going to be a bigger setback. That's all I'm saying. Commercial to commercial.
And it's going to have to say that. It's going to have to say...
It has to say it specifically.
It's going to have to say, here's the buffer for small warehouse, here's the buffer for big warehouse.
Right.
Because otherwise...
But you're going to have two standards if it's next to a commercial right. or a residential.
Yeah, because right. otherwise, yeah. otherwise they're going to right. come in and say, well, we're in the DD district that's 50 feet.
Right.
right. Yeah, the joining properties is going to is right. going to make a difference on the... Right. Is what you're saying, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
I agree. I think that's the way. If it's non-residential, if they're on a DD lot and they're next to other non-residential properties, big deal.
Yep.
Okay. But if it's non-residential, if it's a residential development that borders the DD lot, then I think you need to have a bigger buffer zone.
Right.
And we have to specifically state what it's going to be.
Right.
So if it's 150 feet or 200 feet, I mean, I've seen some that say 300 feet away from a residential property.
Right.
Yeah, I think the one I sent you from Lehigh says 300 feet from a residential property.
I don't know which one it was. I read so many of them.
Yeah. yeah. That's a car.
Well, you need distance when you're 40 feet high. Mm-hmm. And 300 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you've got...
Well, just imagine, I had one 2 years ago that was proposed that was 1 million square feet of floor area. And it was on a property that was pre-zoned, prior to zoning was a golf course, but it was zoned residential even though it was a golf course.
Hmm.
So they needed a curative amendment, which they didn't get, and then they walked away.
Which I know
away.
What that was.
Oh, yeah, deal, yeah. yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, he's still after me.
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
Yeah. But he calls me every once in a while, and you're always screwing up or not.
Again, to me, there's no reason they can't have, I don't even care if it's in the first 25 feet, they have trees and stuff that block the view of the warehouse from the road.
Well, there's going to be a density issue with that too, though. I mean, we're going to have to 25 feet apart is not going to
not
work.
Apart. 25 feet of distance.
I understand.
And stagger.
I understand.
That's why I'm saying you do that, and then you stagger them so that they're filling in between the other trees too.
I understand.
And you got specific trees and.
So does our landscaping standards handle that buffer zone?
Not present.
No.
That's not present.
It's in here though. It's in this.
These landscaping standards that they propose, I think, would be, you know.
In general, I was impressed by that.
The riparian forest buffer area, for the truck terminals, I think they were talking about.
They were talking about berms and having the berm.
Having a berm of plantings.
The plantings on top of the berms.
On top of the berms.
Yeah, right.
I thought it was pretty good.
I saw that.
Yeah.
That was a really good way they wrote that up. I like the whole way they wrote this. You know?
I think one thing we have to be cognizant of too is these standards that we're going to propose for warehouse should also apply to solar.
Yep.
And to any other solar farms, you know, commercial solar farms. And
treat them with the same setbacks.
Power plants.
Treat them
in general.
With the same setbacks.
Yeah.
Same setbacks, well, buffer zones.
So this way, if they decide to ever add on to the compressor plant up there, we have some standards for zoning purposes.
Well, and like I said before, how do we encourage them to use these roofs for solar if we're going to have these massive buildings?
Yeah.
How do we encourage that through the ordinance?
Well, that was in this ordinance.
So in this ordinance...
They have a section where it says to utilize the roof.
In this ordinance, it basically said that all building roofs should be solar-ready, which includes designing and constructed buildings in a manner that facilitates and optimizes the installation of a rooftop solar photovoltaic PV system at some point after the building's been constructed.
So, does that mean that you could have separate operators?
Yep. Yep. And normally you do.
I mean, the solar entity and the warehouse.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So how do we encourage that so that somebody opens their pocketbook quarter?
Well, I think in the ordinance, if you're saying the roof should be solar ready, they're going to use that to their advantage.
I think one of the ways...
Because they're going to have to build it that way, so why wouldn't they utilize it?
When you're doing a project of this size...
Cost.
Yeah, well, here, that's what I'm getting to.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when somebody else comes in and says, right, we'll put solar panels up there, we'll power your place, and we're going to sell power off them.
When you're doing a building this size, it's probably to your benefit to do those solar panels up front. And the reason being is that it does two things. One, you can come back to the municipality and to the county and to the school district and say, look at how we're preserving the energy. This is going to be a fully, you know, self-sufficient building. We may have energy left over that can be used. And it sort of sets up the argument that you need whenever you do these buildings, and that is you're looking for a tax break, whether it's in the form of a TIF or whether it's in the form of LRTA, which requires that the township, the school district, and the county agree to a reduction in taxes.
I'm not for encouraging that.
Yeah. Well, they usually don't build big ones unless they are locked in on that, because it just costs too much. You won't see a big one. You'll see 200,000, 250,000, like what National Land Development wanted to. But I'm saying if somebody gets the bright idea of putting one of these on like 27 or 28 acres up here, which is floating around, there's a lot of 30-acre parcels floating around. if they get the bright idea of doing that, it would... Yeah. And the solar is out of sight, out of mind then, because it's on the roof.
Right. Well, I'd much rather see that utilized than a solar farm.
Absolutely. My same sentiment.
Because they're...
I don't... There is no long-term benefit to the municipalities for the LRTA and the tax advantages. It just does not come out to the advantage. They try to make it sound that it does, but it does not come out to the advantage of the...
Right.
So to encourage that or to go with that is just foolhardy in my opinion.
And I think it,
most schools...
To follow that, I think what we should do, a lot of parking lots that I go in now have the cover over the parking spots all along the outside, and they all have solar panels on them.
Well, I'm for encouraging that too.
And that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, the canopies.
If we can offer something to get them to do that rather than the farms, that, because it costs money to build the canopies.
Oh yeah.
You know, they're not cheap.
No, very expensive to do it that way.
And we got Black Walnut did it over the front of the parking spots up in the front. They put the canopies up with the solar panels on them. Mm-hmm. And that looks rather good, because you don't even know they're solar panels. Right. You just think it's covered for the parking spot.
There's nothing worse than looking at one of these panels when it's getting dark and it's go up, 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 and it's like, and you see, what the hell is that as you're driving by? It's a solar panel straight up.
So, completely off the mark, would it pay when we're actually doing this to to ask